Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 167. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Superfly Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Huggy Bear Thickens.
Ooh. Yeah. And, I love you.
And love Phil me. Shaft Wilson.
I'm one bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, wow. So how you boys doing?
Pretty good for a dreary morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of dreary, fun. Isn't it?
Yeah, they said it was going to be sunny today, but they lied.
Well, you know, it's always like this. It's Iron Man weekend in Lakeville, so it's always going to be like this.
Iron Man or the Avengers?
Iron Man.
Oh, well, my son went and saw the Avengers at midnight.
I saw the Avengers last night, too. So,
is it good?
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, it's getting incredibly great reviews.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. It's still not as good as the first Iron Man. It's just not as good.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, and it was worth going to see. It's kind of a long little sucker. And, you know, add 30 minutes of previews and commercials in the front of that. That's a commitment right there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the commercials are driving me nuts in these theaters.
Yeah. I think Robert Downey Jr. does a great job. I love the guy who's playing Hulk. Oh, God, I've forgotten his name right off the top of my head.
Mark Ruffalo.
Ruffalo, yeah. I think he does a good job.
Well, my son went with a buddy of his, and so I asked him afterwards, you know, what was the highlight? And my son says, Scarlett Johansson.
Well, yeah, but she was wearing far too many clothes. So.
Yeah. Now, guys.
She is phenomenal. There's no doubt about that as far as a presence, if you know what I mean. So anyway, yeah, that was a
cool,
was a good evening spent.
Well, so, you know, there's a lot that happened this past week, but Tim, I want to start with you because you're the one who really looks at this market in depth. And what's up with I mean, I've read all the articles. What's up with the Target thing dropping Amazon products?
Well, what's funny is that in the New York Times piece, they talk about the showrooming and the Amazon shopping app. Mm-hmm. And Amazon had I think even we talked about it on the podcast way back in December, but they had a promotion where you go into any brick and mortar and you scan a product.
Oh,
and
then yes. They would give off.
They give you additional $5 off that product if you bought it on Amazon, which is kind of like, you know, a in your face kind of a promotion, right?
Right.
And and Target at the time said they didn't like it, and apparently they didn't, and now they're citing this because the original leaked memo that I'll have to put it in the show notes, but it was published on The Verge. They had a cryptically worded internal memo that said that they were dropping Amazon products because of a conflict of interest, which was kind of funny. And people speculated that it was because they're expanding their store within a store with Apple, and that an Apple put pressure, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. So I think you'll see some of this. I think you'll see other retailers, maybe Best Buy even, drop Amazon as well because of the showrooming effect.
Well, how much of this, I've only read a couple of these articles about the fact that Kindle Fire sales are dropping. And how much of this do you think is timing that Target waited to see, well, we're not going to give them the boot, you know, because if they really take off, we want to make sure we have them. But now that sales have begun to drop, they're saying, let's pull the plug.
Yeah, but that probably has something to do with it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be a factor. They can make a statement and get out of a slow mover. Sure.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the Kindle Fire is that it did sell a lot of units. And so it appears to be a kind of a holiday driven sort of product, and it doesn't have staying power on the shelves after the holiday.
Yeah, okay. I saw that reported. But the funny thing is Amazon doesn't break out the report. They don't report the number of units sold.
Right.
Unless they changed. Yeah. So it takes outside analysis. But I did see that recent report where it really dropped off. Somebody figured out how many they sold or didn't sell in the quarter following the holidays. It was way down.
Well, you know, one of the things that when a new iPad comes out, you know, we have the lines at the stores, and you go into any store, Apple stores or Target or wherever, and they're out of stock very quickly. I've never saw that with the Kindle Fire. You could go in, you know, on launch day, you could go into Target and they had 10 of them.
Right.
So it was never in short supply because of demand. So either they made a whole crap load of them and you know, sold a lot of them, or they just didn't sell through very quickly. And I think it was the latter. So this whole showrooming trend, which is, you know, consumers using smartphones, going and comparing prices, checking stuff out in a brick and mortar, and then buying online, is hotly debated. And I'll pull another link that I had in my retail coverage yesterday that showed that most people that go in with a smartphone to brick and mortar to check a product out actually buy it at the brick and mortar, which goes against, you know, what Target's claiming here with Amazon.
But yeah. Well, so, you know, I mean, you think about it that when you go in and you're shopping like that, you usually have to stop and think, okay, so what's the shipping going to be? What's the turnaround time? And then, you know, if it's such a minor difference in price, then usually, yeah, you're going to buy in brick and mortar.
Yep. And, you know, there's the sales tax thing, yes. Yeah. Which, yeah, you know, certainly doesn't help Target either. And, you know, but my take is, you know, they've seen what it's done to their crosstown rival, the showrooming thing. And it's like, we don't want to be a Best Buy, you know?
Yeah. So
let's stop doing this.
You know, the thing that always amazes me about Target stores, and part of this is having, you know, being married to a former buyer of electronics at Target, is to really look at how they constantly change end caps and flows, and you know the merchandising is constantly rolling over in ways that will maximize the sales of any given category, and I don't see that same thing at Best Buy.
Or how much a company is willing to pay for an end cap. So that has a lot to do with it too, Steve.
Well, there's that, absolutely. Yeah.
Boy, talk about a scam going on. That's a beautiful thing. So.
But Steve, you're saying that you don't think the in-store merchandising is as sophisticated at Best Buy as it is at Target?
Right.
Okay.
You're right.
Interesting.
Right. You'd
think that they would have been, Best Buy would have been more up to snuff with that, you know, to industry best practices, but maybe Target is just way out in front of most.
Well, and it's different because, you know, people will sometimes, you know, I don't remember what the average is, but it's like once a week, you know, people are at a Target store that shop at Target.
Oh, sure.
And yeah. So, you know, it's a much more, you know, the frequency is much higher, yeah, in a mass merchant like that than it would be, yep, in a big box electronics store. But still, you know, it's interesting because it's, I would agree with, I don't know who said it, Tim or Phil, about the buying, you know, are people really waiting to buy?
I think if there's a significant price difference, they are.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do too.
I think if it's, you know, 10 or 20 bucks, people go, yeah, I'll, you know, get it in 2 days.
Right.
Yeah. If they have Prime, you know, they get free shipping.
Yep.
In 2 days. Yep. Yep. And they save sales tax, at least currently in this state. Did you see where that's changed in Texas now, though? That Amazon came to an agreement with the state of Texas.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, the state of Texas is going to be charging sales tax on all Amazon purchases now. And I think I read where it was around 6 or 6.5% down there.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So it's, you know, slowly, I think, it's gonna change where sales taxes are gonna be collected, you know, maybe in most, if not all, states, you know, because Amazon's just, you know, being beset upon, and is gradually gonna give in. I think, right. You know, they're gonna have to, and they need more and more physical presence, you know, in more and more states, and that of course is an automatic then. I mean, if Amazon had a warehouse here in Minnesota, we would have been paying sales tax long ago, but they don't currently.
Right.
Hey, Tim, can you do me a favor? Could you tell me a little bit about the showrooming phenomena outside of the electronic industry? I mean, have you followed that at all?
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where you see it mostly in the electronics kind of arena, or in the, big box retailers like Target and Walmart, where they're selling the same products, and many times the same products are available online as well. With commodity products, it's not a big phenomenon, but with electronics, it is because the prices are higher. You don't see this in fashion as much, because fashion tends to be, in apparel, tends to be more store related, so it's more exclusive content. So it's very difficult to do that sort of showrooming that you see in electronics. So it's mostly actually an electronics kind of deal, or for small products like say a Keurig, coffee maker, or a waffle iron, or something like that, where you have this sort of thing where people still want to touch and check a product out live, but given that they have the power with the internet and with smartphones and a lot of comparison apps, they can actually, check out the pricing online and get the best deal. And everyone is really going after the best deal these days.
Well, I saw where you're going to be able to do this with used products soon. A new startup that just got Y Combinator, got funded out of Y Combinator, called Price-onomics, is going to do it for used products. So, if you're buying a used iPad, or the example was a Jawbone jam box or something, you can check data online quickly of what's the average price, or the acceptable price range. So it's an interesting concept. And then you can link out from there to Craigslist or eBay and buy, rather than just trusting what somebody's posting. You can actually get a national average of what, you should be paying for such a product. But they're starting with used because nobody else is doing it.
No.
And then they're going to eventually go to newer products, which could start getting into non-electronics kind of stuff.
Well, the millennials are swapping stuff like clothes mostly.
Yep.
Online. Yep. And that's sort of a generational kind of thing where, after they wear something for a while and they want to keep up with the latest fashion, they actually swap stuff. And so there's sites that are popping up to help facilitate that.
Mm-hmm. Where no money changes hands.
Right. Yeah. You just swap stuff up. So
you know what the VCs call that category is collaborative consumption. That kind of comes into the Airbnb and all the other kinds of sites where you're like social collaborative kind of purchases.
Well, the other thing that is a trend is the free market. Which is, Craigslist has a free stuff classified area. And then there's another one that I used when these folks came over from Thailand and wanted us to help them get books for the school in Thailand. I'm trying to remember the name of the site now. I'll find it and put it in the show notes. But it's a place where you can post your stuff that you can just, just give it away. Mm-hmm. And so just for grins, I put on this that I had a box of power supplies and I listed out the stuff that was in there, and a guy emailed me and said, there are six of them in there that I'd love to have. And so I said, oh, great, I'll put it on the front sidewalk of my office. And I gave him the address to the office and I set it out there, and he must have come and gotten it because it was gone like in a couple hours.
Hmm.
And so there seems to be a lot more of that going on as well, where people are not just throwing away stuff, but making it available so that there's stuff shifting around. But let's shift gears for a minute, because I've been thinking about this for a long time, and people have been writing about the fact that, you know, Apple is not necessarily creating more total business in the mobile phone category, but instead a lot of the revenue and a lot of the profits are just shifting to Apple. And Michael Blodgett, the famed Michael Blodgett, wrote about this on Business Insider.
Oh, you mean Henry.
Henry Blodgett. What did I say, Andrew?
You said Michael.
Michael,
sorry. Yeah. He wrote an article about maybe a year ago that showed, you know, in graphic form, how as RIM and Nokia dropped, you know, essentially the total marketplace was for phones was still relatively the same, but Apple was, you know, gathering more and more of the revenue out of the category. So this article in Fortune about 8.8% market share, who put that up there?
I did. And look at the graph, though. The graph is just astounding.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
It's, you know, it's pretty much, you know, HTC, who's made a major switch from 2007 to 2011. You know, they used to be pretty much all Windows Mobile, the old version of Windows.
Yeah.
And they made a huge switch to Android, and they arguably make the best quality Android handsets. And they're pretty much flat. And declining in the current year or the current quarters. But I would think that over time, they're mostly kind of flat in their profitability. And, you know, Apple, of course, is increasing hugely over this time. And then you see what happened to Sony Ericsson, which went to basically zero, and LG that had, you know, a significant feature phone business that in the smartphone area has also been very marginalized. And of course, RIM, you know, they sort of did it to themselves. So that's not, you know, hugely surprising to see what happened to them. And Nokia, you know, that they've really taken a punishing in the smartphone
arena. That's unbelievable.
So it's just crazy to look at this, that, you know, that basically Apple has most of the profits. HTC took 1%. Samsung, who is the largest Android handset maker in the world, 26%, and everybody else lost money.
Jeez.
Yeah, crazy.
I'll put this in the show notes, it'll definitely be in the show notes. And this graph, if you take a look at this graph and you just look at all the blue that's Apple, it's really amazing.
Yep.
Absolutely profits. Amazing.
Yep.
Well, and you know...
And we're talking global, right? As I recall, it's a global piece, and that's all phones, right?
All smartphones.
Smartphones.
So feature phones, which are a major part of LG's and Nokia's business today, and mostly those are, you know, sold outside of the developed world and are still quite profitable, aren't reflected in this. This is only smartphones.
The article says mobile.
It says cell phones. It doesn't.
I don't see. I'm not sure. This is just smartphones.
8.8% market share.
Of all cell phones. Yeah.
And has 73% of cell phone profits.
Which is amazing because they make no low end phones. Apple does not make low end phones. But what you were saying before, Steve, about the size of the pie. How the pie isn't really increasing. Was that what the Blodgett article you were referring to implied? Okay, what that really hinges on, though, is China, and, you know, with apparently a billion smartphones, or I don't know if there's a billion smartphones there yet, but there will be soon. But for Apple, the critical thing is they need to get that big carrier signed. They have two lesser carriers signed now. I forget what the big one is. Is it China Telecom? And they don't have a deal with them yet. But if they do get that, it'll blow it open. But that's a tall order. And then, and that's for phones. And then they've got the iPad problem over there with some outfit in Hong Kong suing them claiming they own the iPad name. You know, so that's kind of hanging up the sales of iPads in China because of the Apple needs to win that lawsuit.
Well, there's a link in that Fortune article, in the paragraph that starts in a separate chart, blah blah blah.
Right.
And if you click on that and go to the second chart on that page, and for those that are listening, again, it'll be in the show notes. But the paragraph under that second chart says, look, seen this way, the market share chart, the story isn't so much that Apple took the profits from the incumbents, rather it's that Apple created a vast new pool of profits.
Mm-hmm.
And they came from the operators, the mobile operators.
Yep. Yep.
So, but at the end of the day, do you guys remember that article when what's his name left Sun and became the chairman and CEO of Motorola, Zander?
Oh yeah.
And he was all excited and brought this flip phone to, the CEO of Verizon, who basically said, look, I don't care about voice. All I care about is data. And that's where the profits were, because they could charge so much more on the data side. And that's what these smartphones do, and Apple does it arguably best. So it's pretty yep. amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the carriers now are hurting because of the subsidy. You know, there's a concern in the market that the carriers are going to try to snatch back some of the revenues that they're giving up. You know, with these. You know, by subsidizing the purchase of a phone. So there's that sort of pull between the carriers and Apple going on too, which is having some, you know, concern in the market, the pressure on Apple stock. So between that and China, those are two current question marks in the yeah. minds of investors.
Well, I think it's because the carriers, especially here in the U.S., think that Apple has too much power, and they're trying to get behind the Windows Phone launch mm-hmm. to try to make that a contender. You know, they're doubling down on Android, and they just want to make sure that Apple doesn't, completely control their business as it pretty much is doing right now. So I think that they're in danger, and it looks like from what I'm seeing anyway, that Google is going to try to go direct again. I don't know, Phil, have you seen that they're selling the Galaxy Nexus unlocked on the Google Play site?
No, I haven't taken a look at that yet. So I'm kind of patiently waiting for that the 5 to come out just out of curiosity for the iPhone. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't affect you a Sprint, but it's the GSM yeah. model, but it's you can buy it for $399.
Oh, wow, totally that's unlocked, cheap. Wow.
Totally unlocked.
Wow.
Works on both T-Mobile and AT&T. And that's a very attractive, you know, offer, because if you go into the Apple store and you want to buy an unlocked Apple, you know, iPhone,
and something,
it's
right?
like, yeah, I think it's $699, isn't it? Or
yeah,
is it $599?
It's way up there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a huge disparity. So a lot of people, like I'm seriously looking at that. So it's, you know, if Apple and Google are somehow able to disintermediate the carriers, I think that we're going to see a huge restructuring in the mobile business.
Well, and that's kind of what it seems to be leaning toward. Well, what about tablets? I mean, are tablets for the most part, do you guys think, going to remain as primarily Wi-Fi based devices, or do you think that the mobile data will continue to accelerate?
Well, I think that people are not going to pay for multiple data plans. I think
absolutely not. Yeah.
You know, and one of the reasons why I still will probably stay on Android is that we have, you know, hotspot capability that you don't have to pay extra for. It just comes as part of the operating system, and at least my carrier doesn't upcharge me for it. So as long as I have that, I can tether any Wi-Fi device
yep.
Wherever I'm at, and I can get, you know, quote 4G speeds, which are on T-Mobile HSPA plus. So, and are not terribly bad. So, you know, as long as I have one data plan to pay for, I don't see the need to have 3G or 4G data. you know, on a tablet.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And that's why I've always bought Wi-Fi iPads. And the numbers of Wi-Fi only iPads, a percentage, has got to be huge as part of the overall iPad sales, right? The great majority of people are buying the Wi-Fi only models.
Well, I saw an article yesterday. I'll have to look for it. It was about the new version of the iPad 2. Did anyone see this?
No.
They have a new chip?
They have a brand new version that has an A5 chip that, you know, it's the old A5 chip that is now in a very much smaller die, and they've changed the battery. So apparently between those two things, the new iPad 2, which are just starting to be sold through in the marketplace, get significantly higher battery life than the old iPad 2 or the current iPad.
Right.
It sell for $399?
Yeah.
Well, then why would anybody buy the old iPad 2 then?
Well, that's why Apple hasn't said much.
Right, yeah.
Because they probably got a lot of inventory of the existing one.
So I would think that, you know, I've been looking. If you go into any Best Buy store, they've got a display that has like three current, you know, new iPads with a Retina display and then an iPad 2 sitting next to it. And you can go back and forth between them. And for reading, you totally get it. But for everything else, it's really not that much different.
Yeah.
So given the battery life situation and given the pricing, I think they're going to sell a lot of iPad 2s.
Well, I will tell you that I have it on very good authority based on connections I still have in the Apple education space, that the only thing, and I'm being somewhat generalized here, but the only thing that K-12 and higher ed wants to talk about is tablets.
Yep.
Is iPads. That's it. That's all they want to talk about.
Well, Lakefield just rolled them out just like a week ago.
Right.
Here.
Awesome. Right.
And I think they're all iPad 2s.
Well, we were at my son's school and they've begun rolling out iPads to teachers and staff as the first wave so that they can get comfortable with them this year. And then they're going to be doing something in the fall. I don't know what the details are, but you know, it makes so much sense rather than let's buy, you know, iMacs or laptops or Dell workstations or, you know, whatever. Just makes so much more sense to have these smaller, cheaper, arguably more fluid devices.
Yep. You got a feel for the other companies trying to sell hardware into schools. Oh, man. I don't think their calls are being returned.
I know. Well, you know, so this link here about the tablet market outlook in 2017, I read this yesterday that, you know, NPD said that Apple will lose a quarter of the tablet market by 2017. You know, if I could talk to somebody there, I would say, yeah, and warp drive will be invented by 2020. I mean, come on. How can you possibly, it's 2012, how can you possibly project that? Now, there's no question that somebody's going to figure out how to go after the sweet spot and Apple can't continue the domination that they have in the iPad space, I wouldn't think. But
if you look at the chart, it shows, you know, a pretty large growth in Android. And I just don't see that. I think that the growth in Windows makes complete sense because, you know, Apple or Microsoft's really making some moves in Windows 8.
Yes,
and I think
are.
Windows 8 is going to be either their most successful operating system ever, or it will be like a failure that makes Vista look like a success
of epic proportion.
Yeah,
I think they'll do very well.
I agree with you, and I think they'll do very well in tablets too, because their strategy is different.
Well, and they can integrate.
Appeal to a lot of consumers.
Yeah, and they can integrate. I mean, they have so many opportunities to connect. I mean, I still look at the Google Analytics for various sites that I'm involved in, including Minovate, and Minovate actually has the lowest IE usage of any site that I keep track of, and it's 2.9% are people coming in on IE. It's Firefox, it's Chrome, it's Safari, it's, you know, various mobile devices and all of that.
How big is Opera?
I'd have to go in and look. Oh, but when I look at our home furnishings site, And we've got, we get about 9,000 to 10,000 page views a week on trendcurve.com. When I look at that site, 61% last year were IE flavors. And out of that was like 12% IE6. It's like, what? Are you serious?
But it's big companies.
But it's the market. It's big companies. A lot of them are still on Windows XP.
Yep.
So I think you're absolutely right. I think Microsoft has unbelievable opportunity just in their own space. You know, forget about anything new. I think it's pretty exciting for them.
Yeah, I just don't see Android growing and taking as much share as they're showing here. And, 2017, that's a long ways off.
Yeah. Well, anybody can make a prediction that far away.
I personally think RIM will storm back.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to predict by 2017 that Zefrin Cochran will be famous before he invents the warp drive.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
Hey, put out a news release. You'll get
it's an
coverage.
Alternative history. Okay, we don't have this world war thing. Yeesh. And he becomes a successful entrepreneur first, but then he goes on to invent the warp drive in a spare time. Sort of like what that filmmaker, what's his name, James Cameron's doing with going to the bottom of the sea.
Okay, you have to find the Zefram Cochran link to Star Trek Next Generation of that episode so people know what the hell you're talking about. That's your responsibility, Tim.
Wasn't that in the movie, though? That was in First Contact.
Yeah,
you're
right. I'm sorry.
They talk about Cochran in Next Generation.
There we go.
See him in First Contact.
You're right. I apologize.
I'm sorry to say that much of our audience probably knows what that reference
yes,
is.
Oh, I'm sure they all do.
Trekkies.
Oh, man. Well, you guys.
That's deep. Did you walk around yesterday saying "May the Fourth be with you" all day? Is that what you did?
I remember sitting in line 35 years ago. Can you believe that? 35 years ago, I waited in line with a buddy of mine for 3.5 hours on the first day, and we sat near the screen. It was one of these huge movie houses in Los Angeles.
What they call giant screens now, which we used to call movie theaters. Yeah.
But this held maybe 800 people, mm-hmm. and it was an enormous screen. And we sat on one side near the front to see episode 4 on the first day. And we waited 3.5 hours in line.
Wow.
It was crazy. Do you remember that? I mean, I can't remember a movie. You had all the other sequels, and you had the Raiders series, where you would wait in line for these things. And I remember waiting in line to see The Shining, of all things, with all the Kubrick fans, apparently. But do we wait in line at all these days for movies?
Well, my son, he went to a marathon, a Marvel marathon, movie marathon Thursday. That culminated in the midnight showing of the Avengers. So they saw like 7 movies.
Wow. And
they waited in line to get in because there were so many geeks that were in line.
So that takes some dedication. There were 7 hours of movies. Holy.
Yeah, tell me about it.
We walked right in yesterday, last night at 9 o'clock show. So.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of hot dogs and crappy popcorn too.
I know. Plus I asked him, I said, what's that on your pants? And he said, chocolate. It's like, oh my God. Anyway, hey, we didn't talk about, when we were talking about Microsoft, we didn't talk about the huge announcement about their adventure, their new venture with Barnes & Noble.
Well, I'm really excited. I can't contain myself.
I got to tell you, there's a lot of Nooks that have been sold.
Kindle for a Nook. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many Nooks have been sold. Do we know?
We don't, but I think it's been a success. And arguably, they've got the best e-readers on the market right now.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I've been reading about is people are hacking them so they can rip the Nook and turn it into a tablet. I think you even talked about that, Tim.
Yeah, no, they're tablets
a jailbreaker root his. Never. He'd never root anything in his life.
Oh, yeah. No, but they were very popular as root devices, and they still are. And you can get them, like a little over $100 now. So that makes them an attractive option.
Wow.
But I think that they've got a good line of products for that. They're giving Amazon a run for their money, I think. But at the same time, it's not as nearly as big as the Kindle.
Well, yeah.
But it's interesting because the thing that that Microsoft was doing is they go around to everybody that makes any kind of Android device and they sue them for copyright infringement because their legal position is that Android infringes on Microsoft patents. They haven't sued Google yet. I think they're waiting to see what happens with the Oracle case first, but they've sued everybody else and they extort, well, extorts is a strong word. They reach settlements with people like Samsung and others. Barnes & Noble was one of the few that said, okay, we're going to take you to court on this because, you know, the Nook is based on Android, even though it doesn't look like it. Mm-hmm. They reached this agreement and Barnes & Noble is now going to kind of JV out their Nook business. And Microsoft has invested $300 million in it. And they're going to do all sorts of interesting things with near field communication. So they'll be able to do something interesting with it, which, you know, you hear about NFC and it's mostly about paying for stuff, you know, like a wallet in your cell phone. What Barnes & Noble will do with the Nook is they'll put NFC in and you'll be able to go to a Barnes & Noble store with your Nook and just tap any kind of physical book and information will show up on your Nook about, you know, about that book, more information. And you can actually buy it right on the Nook. So they're using NFC in kind of a new and innovative way.
So basically they're going to showroom their own place.
Yes, yep. Correct. Yep.
Interesting.
Which is a smart idea.
Interesting concept. Yeah. So now your shelves are filled with like dummy books. They're basically,
take this to the logical extreme. We're seeing in places like Korea and other countries that have a transit culture. I think they're also in the UK, where you're seeing these virtual stores. And basically they're stores with pictures and either QR codes or NFC where you go, you're sitting at a tube station and with your phone, you're ordering your groceries with little pictures and usually the QR codes. And
What's the name of that store that sort of pioneered that? It's a Japanese store.
It's in Tokyo,
I can't remember the name of it. Yeah.
They have virtual grocery shelves in the subways.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it literally looks like a whole grocery shelf and you walk up and you can order your stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I can see Barnes & Noble being like a virtual, a virtual bookstore at some point where they still have, you know, the best sellers or whatever that you'll want in paper form, but they'll have a whole section of just virtual, especially things like magazines. There's a lot of special interest magazines that are really hard to get here. You have to go and you either have to subscribe to them. Like I like Decanter magazine and I can't buy it at every Barnes & Noble. I have to go downtown to find it.
Wait a minute. Decanter magazine?
Yeah.
Is that about what's in the decanter or just the decanters themselves?
It's just decanters. It's like a coffee table book.
It's the wine magazine for the UK. It's the biggest one. It's sort of like the Wine Spectator of the UK.
Okay. So they do talk about what the liquid that goes in the decanters.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I was going to say,
it's very well written and it's followed by the wine trade here. And a lot of people subscribe to it. I don't. I just pick it up when I see it.
Yeah.
But I would love to be able to go and subscribe to Decanter digitally. And if I could go into my Barnes & Noble with a Nook and do that, great. You know?
Huh. That's good.
Interesting. And if this NFC thing, that in my mind, that may be the only way it'll catch on. I mean, other than in specific unique cultures like South Korea and Japan, but you know, I wonder if our friends at Best Buy are listening. Maybe this is something that they could do in store.
Well, I'm sure they've thought about it. They're the ones that have put QR codes on their shelf fronts. So mm-hmm. I'm sure it's been considered. Mm-hmm. And NFC is I think that's easily going to be the replacement for the QR code concept. But at the same time, it does take a little time to get to that point because that's a hardware piece or a software piece for your phone. So
right.
Or your mobile device, not all devices are equipped with it. And I don't think it can be something that can be installed with an app.
No, there are a lot of naysayers about NFC thinking it's way overhyped and it'll never really catch on as a payment, you know, as a broad, far-reaching payment method.
No, I think it will. I really do. It's just a matter of time.
It's going to be cheap enough where the people, they're just going to throw it into every phone.
Yeah, well, we'll yep. see. You know, it's, I don't think it's a sure thing, but something like what Barnes & Noble is doing sure sounds interesting.
Yeah, and they're going to also do a version of their software for the Windows platform. So they'll have a Metro interface version of the Nook software for reading books.
Hmm.
Well, you know what the downside of all this is? I just finished the first three seasons of Mad Men because my wife had watched them. And now I'm on season 4, and she said to me, I have season 4. I said, oh, really? Did you buy it through iTunes so we could watch it on the Apple TV potentially? She goes, oh, no, I bought it through Amazon. And I was like, oh, geez, the only way I can watch it then is to hook her laptop up to or somehow log in to Amazon to be able to watch them.
You have a TiVo Series 4, don't you?
I do.
So do I. And I buy Amazon stuff all the time. You can download it right to your TiVo, right from Amazon.
I learn so much from you every time, Tim.
There you go. And you play it right on the TiVo. And if she was smart and she bought the HD version, you even see it in HD.
Well, as it turns out, it was on Netflix Season 4. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well. Yeah. But anyway, my point was... I can't really make very well, but I'll try to make it. I'll try to make it anyway. Is that I might like to on my iPad buy from Barnes & Noble and buy from Amazon and buy from iBooks and all of that. And it's not simple.
But you can buy from all those people. You can't
yes.
iPad buy it directly, but
correct.
You could go use Mobile Safari and do it if you want it.
Correct.
But all those readers, you can read Barnes & Noble content and Kindle content and wherever on your iPad.
Yeah. And it is getting simpler to do things like, open PDFs in iBooks and iBook Reader, and so on. And so it's getting easier to move content around inside the iPad. And I think we're going to continue to see that because there's going to be so much demand from people to say, hey, wait a minute. I don't want to be locked into something. I want to be able to buy what I want to buy, where I want to buy it, and keep moving. Well, let's before we jump into the last couple things here, let's talk about our pals at Best Buy.
Oh, the Death Watch.
Ones that are left.
Well, Oh my God! So Barry Judge resigns. Article this morning in the Strib about the executive in charge of China leaves Best Buy.
Dave Deno.
They're really cleaning house.
Well, these guys are jumping to other opportunities. In the case of Deno, going back to the restaurant business, the parent company of Outback Steakhouse. But I guess he had previously worked at Yum Brands in the restaurant category. So,
Restaurant business is such an easy business. So you want to get back to something a little less stressful.
Yeah exactly.
Why would anybody want to go there, But
hey, the fringe benefits are good. You get a steak for lunch.
Yeah.
It's sort of like working at Google.
And a bloomin' onion for your break.
There you go.
Yeah, but anyway, I'll tell you, and a lot of people, basically the 400 they lopped off are gone. I heard of another senior executive that was one of those going.
There's no need, no reason to be surprised. You changed the guard.
So that new guy that they got from Starbucks,
Gillette. No, it's Gillette. Steven Gillette.
Gillette.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. He's the new CMO apparently.
Yeah, he's taken on even additional responsibilities now. Okay. And there are analysts saying, you know, how can one person take on all that, you know? But
when the plane is nosediving into the Pacific, the navigator plays a huge role in trying to solve the problems. You know?
That's a great analogy.
That is a great analogy.
The stewardess is even in the cockpit trying some stuff. You know what I mean?
Ryan Dunn and now the Yahoo guy. These CEOs are getting beaten up on big time. The Yahoo guy being, I don't want to switch topics here, but the Yahoo guy being accused of falsifying his resume. And not one of the major
Erickson's LinkedIn.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Mike
Erickson's LinkedIn is hilarious.
It says chief executive officer at Yahoo. I'll put this in the show notes.
And then it says he got the Nobel Prize for blogging.
Where's that? Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's the award. You got to click on the thing for under it for the award.
Oh, you're right.
And I thought if anyone would win the Nobel Prize for blogging, it would be Michael Arrington.
That's hilarious. That is good. All right. I'm definitely putting that in the show notes. How funny. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, you know, the good news about all of us scanning the world now for content is that we come up with it, but then when we pull it out of our brains, it's like, wait a minute, where did I read that? It's getting harder and harder and harder to figure out where the hell stuff came from.
Yep.
True.
So
I put a bunch of stuff in Pocket. That's sort of my secret weapon these days.
Now, how does that compare with Instapaper and Read It Later?
Well, Read It Later is now called Pocket. So I used to use Read It Later instead of Instapaper because Marco Arment chooses not to do an Android version of Instapaper.
Okay.
And I know that there are Android apps that do Instapaper, but they're all crap. So Read It Later, especially the pro version, which I think I paid $3 or $4 for, was actually quite good. And then now they've changed over to Pocket, and it's even better. So I think it's a pretty good solution.
Huh. Okay.
And I do use Instapaper online for some stuff because I do like what he does with making EPUBs from your Instapaper collections.
Yeah.
If I have a lot of long form articles, I put long form articles in Instapaper and then I convert them into EPUBs and put them on my Nook and read them that way. Yeah.
I've been using Instapaper now for a year and a half maybe. And, so now when I have, and I use it too to archive stuff. So when I have articles that I come across, like, you know, the top 20 security plugins for WordPress, well, that's something I want to keep. And I don't necessarily want to bookmark it in Chrome because then I can access it because I sync up the Chrome bookmarks, but that doesn't help me when I'm on my iPad and Instapaper works across everything.
Yep.
And, but I'll take a look at Pocket.
Does Pocket. Yeah. Pocket's sort of, their new version of the software and their new user interface is very much like Flipboard.
I love Flipboard.
So try it on the iPad because it's really good on at least the Android phone.
I will.
It's a nice looking interface, and I'm sure it's better on a tablet.
Hey, what about this tool that the former YouTube founders, they bought Delicious. Have you guys checked into what they're doing yet, or is it still too early?
They're still in stealth mode.
What do they call that thing? I'm trying to remember. Or is it just a company name? Anyway, they're trying to, you know, bring back that whole Delicious concept and play in this same space.
Yeah, I still have a Delicious account that I've used for 7 years, and I still use it just because I got a bunch of links there.
So they didn't kill it.
No, Delicious is still around. It's not much different than it always used to be.
Okay, so they own it. They bought it. They bought the rights to it for not much, and they've got a lot of money. Chad Hurley and what's the other fella's name? So my bet is that they will phase that out when they launch their new play, but they'll probably allow you to grandfather in, I would think.
Yeah, I would hope that they would allow me to to move my 7 years of links.
Yes, they better.
I'm sure they will. Well, plus you can export them too.
That's true. I can always go to what's that other? There's a
OPML. You can export them as OPML.
Yeah, but there's another service that started up when it looked like Delicious was going to die. Well, you could go to Digo, or you could go to this. There's another one too that started up, which is like a clone of Delicious. Okay. Anywho, there are competitors. There are options.
Well, one of the things I wanted to mention that has been a trend that a recruiter that I hired when I was at Lawson, he's in the tech space, and we've gone back and forth for years. You know, we have lunch every once in a while. And he said, have you noticed all the, and I hadn't because I hadn't been looking, but he says, have you noticed all the jobs that are, you know, senior business analyst jobs for digital, director or VP level, digital channel management kinds of jobs? And I said, well, not really. Well, after that lunch, then I went off and took a look, and there are a lot in the Twin Cities.
Really?
Of organizations. I just did a quick look up here. Here's a senior business analyst for digital and multi-channel technology at Target. And so more and more companies, I've seen the same thing at some of the insurance companies. And so what's happening is all of them are realizing that we need a strategic plan to really take advantage of all this, attention being paid to non-traditional sorts of channels that are all digital. So it's interesting. And we'll have to see where that goes. Well, that landed like a lead balloon. Okay.
It's going to go apparently to the bottom of the ocean.
There we go. Well, so the last piece about our pals at Best Buy, Graham, you I think you were the one who sent this out about Best Buy expanding.
Yeah, we've got some good expanding news about expanding. Best Buy. Stop everything.
Oh, geez, expanding
a Bloomington facility and adding workers.
I heard
that some of those laid off executives might be applying, but no. What
driving
what
forklifts?
They how many jobs are they adding? They're expanding to about 150 or something.
400 jobs.
That's
eliminating.
That's
I'm sorry.
Cut.
That's what they got. Yeah. So
at headquarters. No, this well somewhere.
There's still still 250 in the red.
they're expanding a distribution center in West Bloomington. And so they're talking about adding on to 155,000 square foot addition will be added. And
28 new jobs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, it's a
how many new jobs?
28.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, it's something. You know,
it's better than nothing, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you can say they're expanding when they collapse 400 jobs and add 28
and close 50 stores.
Close 50 stores.
We're trying here. We're trying to be
Mr. Silver Lining over there.
Yeah,
you got to take it where you can get it.
Spy, right? Yeah. This was courtesy of our friends at Twin Cities Business, which does that great daily developments newsletter. Jake Anderson at TCB Mag reported that news.
Yep.
Well, see, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I'm getting pretty hammered here, just drinking tequila. Do you remember it's Cinco de Mayo, right?
Oh,
we've been boozing for about an hour.
I thought I had to have huevos or rancheros for breakfast.
Yeah, I did. I had that. I didn't. I'm not slamming the tequila though.
So, well, before I pass out, we should probably talk a little bit about what's coming up in the next week. Don't you think?
Let's do it.
Sure.
That's right. You have to drink a lot to go to Drupal Camp.
Yeah, but that's the week after.
My God.
And I am going to Drupal Camp. So
start doing
all right. I've packed my sleeping bag and I'm ready to go.
You
camp.
Never
you'll,
go
you'll
to
have
Drupal
to
Camp.
Report back from that. So 2 days of Drupal. I'd be ready to shoot myself if I went for Drupal for 2 days. You know?
You know, I find that it's not always a great thing to mock and poke fun at a platform or a lifestyle without really knowing all about it. So I'm not free to say. So
you're going with an open mind?
I'm going with an open mind. predictive and social media analytics and the world of big data.
I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to be a good event.
And it's
21st of May.
it's a huge crowd. It's approaching 400 already, and it might even be sold out. So hurry up. It's a free event, sponsor supported. You might still be able to slip in, but going to be some great speakers, including Robert Stevens. And I know my friends Jamie Ostheimer and Paul Saarinen are speaking. Paul's going to be talking about a similar topic as he spoke about at South by Southwest, and it's about owning your own genomics data.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, it's a futuristic kind of a play.
Don't you always kind of own your genome?
Well, it's a way.
I mean, I'm walking around with it. I pretty much own it.
It's a way for you to control and essentially use it to your advantage in the marketplace. It's a fascinating topic, and based on the research of University of Minnesota genetics researcher.
Well, I'm going to be really fascinated by that, because it's after having done the 23andMe genetic testing and looking at the fact that I, you know, thank God, have basically not my biggest risk is psoriasis. I have a 1.8% greater risk than the average humans out there. But
psoriasis.
It's like a skin cracking disorder. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, but so that's the good news. The bad news is, you know, what if I had a high risk for, you know, something else, and somebody decided not to employ me? You know, this has been the ethical debate for a long time about genetics data. So it's going to be interesting. That's going to be a good session.
I once didn't hire somebody because of psoriasis. I just want you to know.
You dog, you. But anyway, yeah.
I found it unsightly and uncomfortable to look at.
Yeah. What's happening with this data is it's going to become less and less costly to get this data, and it's going to free in the not too distant future.
Okay.
So it's a very...
Because we in the internet know how to rip the profit out of anything.
There you go.
That's exactly right. All right. Well, let's just talk about one more that's new on here, and then we just got a few other events. We'll put them in the show notes. But the Collaboratives Tech 2012 event on the 22nd, the next day, done by the Collaborative. Or I said the Collaborative, didn't I?
Yes, yep. You did.
But they're really fleshing out the panels. And they're going to talk about the cloud and the app economy, the enterprise and everything mobile. And people like Matt Nordquist from Code 42 and Michael Gorman from Split Rock and Jamie Thingelstead from Eighth Bridge and even our pal Jim Bernard from the Strib, the digital SVP, Robert Stevens. So, I mean, it's going to be a really good event. And
just out of curiosity, what makes somebody our pal? Just out of curiosity.
Because when we see them, they smile and look at us.
Oh, they don't run the other way.
They can fog a mirror.
Yeah, yeah. And they listen to our podcast because they say they do.
They can fog a mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. It's anyone who ever said they think they might have listened to one of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I can't be at that one, Steve, but I'll be winging my way to Denver for the Glue conference.
Yeah.
I'm unfortunately going to miss that one.
Well, there I'll you think go. About we'll, you.
On the same day, I'd just like to mention that the Nerdery is having the Overnight Website Challenge reunion for people that participated and the nonprofits, which is interesting. It's the first time they've done this.
I like
that.
Is this
tequila all around, or what's?
I don't know. I signed up for it, and I'll go, and I'll report back after the 22nd on what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. Phil, did you get one of these invites to it?
Did I get an invite?
Yeah, to the Overnight Website Challenge reunion.
I did.
You did? Oh, okay. So I was thinking that it was everybody that's ever done the website challenge, not just people from this year.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear that you've been invited as well. Since you are... Indeed, a veteran.
So I got ceremoniously tossed off the team. Yeah, sure.
You're always, the space is always available for
I'm
you.
Just kidding you. You know that. I'm just kidding. So that should be a lot of fun. But also, Nerdery, speaking of Nerdery, WordPress Campus, or MSP, WordPress MSP is the 24th. So we got lots going on. More on the site, right?
You got it.
All right. So.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm about to eat the worm, so I got to go.
All right, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
It's a tequila and a mezcal reference, by the way. Just nothing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think everybody got that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, when you're this drunk, you got to figure out if people are actually getting your jokes.
So. Especially the surfers among us.
Yeah. Surfers like tequila.
Surfers like
huevos rancheros.
All right. We will see you next week again on
the Minivade Gang Podcast.
Adios, amigos.
Take care.